Okay, so today is Kuf Lamed Ches. We will start from the two dots, which is about six lines down. We're learning the Mishnah. Kamen Loisin Loi. So the previous Omer, which I don't know if everyone did, talked about how much wool needs to be Mechuyev and Resh Dageis. So we know it's five sheep, it's got to weigh a certain amount, there's different opinions. But then the Mishnah said, so how much of that do you give to the Kohen? So the Mishnah said, you have to give the weight of five Mishkal Chomesh Shloim B'Yehuda Shehein Eser Shloim B'Galil. You have to give the weight of five Yehudian Judean sellers, which is the exchange rate is equivalent to 10 Galilean Shloim. Yeah, and then it said Meluban V'Loitzoi, white and not dirty, cleaned and not dirty. So if you just read that, it would sound like the owner of the sheep has to clean it and give it to the Kohen clean and not dirty. Says the Gemara, Tana, we learned in the Braisa, Loi sheyilabnenu v'yitnenu loi. Not that he has to clean it and give it to him. Ela sheyilabnenu Kohen v'yamar chomish loi. The Balabos has to give him enough wool that when the Kohen will clean it, he will end up with five shloim of clean wool. Not that you have to clean it and give it to the Kohen, five shloim, but you give the Kohen enough so that once he cleans it, it'll be five shloim. So the obligation... So the obligation of cleaning it is on the Kohen. You don't have to go take your wool to the... to the cleaners, yeah. Take the wool to the cleaners. Pull the wool over your eyes, supposed to be the metaphor, but anyway. Yeah. So that's the pshat there. Okay. Then it says, why is that the shear? Kedei la'asoyz beged koton. To make a small garment. So what's a small garment? I mean, that's kind of vague as well. A small garment could be anything. Could be, we used to have a book at home called the Teeny Tiny Yarmulke back in the day. When I had teeny tiny kids. Actually, I wonder if I still got it, because it's my granddaughter's here now. I should appreciate it. Anyway, a teeny tiny beged, yeah? How much wool do you need for a teeny tiny beged? So the Gemara says, Menahan Emili, first of all, how do I get the idea that the amount of wool you have to give is to make a small beged? Because Amar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, Amar Kra, the Pasuk says, Lam de l'shoris. In Parshas Shoftim, when the Torah says Reishis Geis Tzoyin Chatitan Loi, that you give the first wool to the Kohen, the next pasuk says, why do you have to give it to the Kohen? Ki boi bachar Hashem, because God chose him Lamed L'Shoris, to stand there and serve in the Beis Hamikdash. So as a reward, or maybe it's work for the doll, whatever, however you want to look at it, the fact is that the Kohen is given the task of working in the Beis Hamikdash. So therefore, he is not available to have a normal job. So you have to give him, you have to pay him, basically. And that's what the 24 Matnes Kohuna is about. So the Pasuk uses the expression, Lamed L'Shoris, to stand and to serve. So therefore, we look ahead from when we talk about giving the wool and talking about the Kohen serving, to tell you that the wool you have to give to the Kohen is Dover Roy L'Sherus, something that is fitting and useful and suitable to be used in the Kohen service. What is the smallest thing that the Kohen wears in his service? My niu, what is that? The avnet, the belt, the gartel. The Kohen, one of the four things a normal Kohen wore was an avnet, and that's the smallest one. And therefore, you have to give him enough wool to make an avnet. We'll see in a minute whether the avnet actually had wool in it, but that's a different question. We'll get to it. First of all, the Gemara says, how do you know it's the smallest one? Lamed L'Shoris, maybe it's one of the bigger ones, yeah? Eima Me'il. The Me'il would be, I guess, the biggest one. The Me'il is like the jacket, yeah? So he had four things. A Kohen Hedger, for example, he wore pants and a jacket and a hat and an avne. So the L'Chaimah, the biggest one was the jacket, yeah? The most wool required. So why did he decide that the shear is for the smallest one, which is the Avnet? Maybe it's for the biggest one, which was the Me'il. And this is the Gemara, a good life lesson over here. Tafasta meruba, lo tafasta. If you try to grab a lot, you won't get anything. Tafasta mua, tafasta. If you just grab a little bit, you'll get it. In other words, the Torah doesn't tell you how much to take. So you haven't got a right. If you start saying it's a lot, then a lot can, you can get into a bidding war, yeah? Oh, you have to give a lot. So one guy will say, give him a il. The other guy will say, what are you talking about? Give him a kapota. The other guy will say, give him a chves nishvos, yeah? And it'll get, it'll, it's, there's no, because there's no definitive thing in the Torah. So you could make up anything. You'll just go on forever and you won't get anywhere. But if you take the smallest thing, then there's no debate. The smallest thing is the smallest thing. There's only one smallest thing. So therefore, if you take that, but the lesson is always don't go overboard. Take whatever is the simplest, smallest, postulatest thing. That's the one to take. So the Gemara says, "Ayo bazo, if I'm gonna take a muat tafasta muat muat tafasta, there's aim a kipish al tzemer. There was a little string of wool that was used for the Kohen Gadol, who had a little string aside. It wasn't really counted as one of the eight begodim. It was really just something to hold the tzitz in place. Yeah, it was like a chves. I don't know how to call it. It was maybe it was counted as part of the tzitz. It was the little piece of wool, a kippah. Kippah, you know, kippah of wool. The Tanya, we learned in a braisa, kippah shel tzemer hoisa munachas bresh Kohen Gadol. The Kohen Gadol had a little woolen kippah on his head. V'aleha tzitz notzun. And that's what the tzitz was held on by the kayim ashenemar, to fulfill what the pasuk says. With samta oisoyal pasil tuchelis, when the Torah tells the kohen to put the tzitz on, it says put it on this string of wool. So it wasn't even a garment; it was just a string, yeah, a woolen string. So how, if you're going to take the smallest possible thing that is used in the service of the kohen. Why take the belt? Take the string that's even smaller. Yeah. Answer the Gemara, because who wore that? Only the Kohen Gadol. Omar Kra, the Pasuk said, that same Pasuk about Lama the Shari says, Hu Ubanov, he and his sons. Dabar Hashavila Aaron Levonov. It has to be something that both Aaron and his sons would wear. That string was only the Kohen Gadol, not Bonov. So therefore, that's cancelled. Yeah, it can't be the string. What is the smallest thing that both a Kohen Gadol and a Kohen Hedger wear? That is an avnate. Yeah? Okay, so we're back to the avnate. Fredig Umaravaiter. Avnate Nami Leshove. But 1 second. You may remember a debate. We've had it in a few places, I think. But where was the last place we had this debate? In Yuma, I think, yeah? When it talks about the big day, the service of the Kohen, there it talks about whether the Kohen Gadol and Yom Kippur, if his avnet could be used for another Kohen during the year, etc. So there it talks about what exactly was the avnet made out of. So the Gemara is asking over here, the avnet also loishavi. You're telling me it has to be something who are bond of that the Kohen Gadol and the Kohen Hedger both wear the same thing, but the belt is not necessarily the same. Hanicha lemando omar avnet yishol Kohen Gadol loizahu avnet yishol Kohen Hedger is shapir. According to the opinion, there is an opinion over there in Yuma, that the avnet that the Kohen Gadol wore on Yom Kippur is not the same as the avnet that a normal Kohen wears during the week. We know the Kohen Gadol and Yom Kippur did not wear the golden things for the Avodah when he went inside the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Yeah, he took off the gold and he wore only the Big Day Lavan, right? The non-gold, the white, what's called the white garments, yeah? He didn't bring the gold in. So when the Kohen Gadol was wearing the four begotim on Yom Kippur, one of them was the belt. The question is, that belt that the Kohen Gadol was wearing on Yom Kippur, is that the same as a normal avnet that a Kohen Hedger wears all year round? So one opinion says that the avnet of the Kohen Gadol was different. What would be the difference? That the avnet of the Kohen Gadol was pure linen, no wool involved. But the avnet of the Kohen Hedger was wool. Had wool in it. Yeah. So therefore, what does that mean? That the Kohen Gadol one was different. But the year-round one, that means the Kohen Gadol year-round also wore wool one. That means everybody wore wool one. So therefore, during the year, everybody was Hu'ubonov. And therefore, you could say that it's the Avnate. El lemanda amar zehu avnate yishol Kohen Hedger. But if you say that the Kohen Hedger all year round wore the Avnate of the Kohen, in other words, the Avnate during the year was the same as the Avnate in Yom Kippur. That means none of them had any wool. Yeah, so you're trying to work out how much wool to give to a kohen. You can't choose a garment that didn't have any wool in it. So that ain't going to work. Yeah, ma'ika l'meimar. So what are you going to say about that? Answer the Gemara, shame avnet ba'olam. As long as you got one avnet somewhere that had... if you have... And even though the avnet of the Kohen Gadol was not the same, yeah, as long as you've got somewhere one avnet, then that is... as long as you've got somewhere one avnate that is the, that is a smaller size, then that is enough. Yeah. That's a good, just explain that, right? Yeah. So that's a Moshe says, it's the other way around. The Kohen Gadol had wool. It's the other way around. It was, when I said, not so, I didn't say right. It's the other way around. I take it back. The Kohen Gadol's one had wool, and the Kohen Hedges one didn't have wool. Right. So he says that they're not the same. So he says, yes, but as long as there was an avnet somewhere in the Beis HaMikdash covered that had wool in it, then that's good enough, even though, and it qualifies as who will bond off, even though the ingredients of the Kohen Hedget's avnet was not the same as the ingredients of the Kohen Gadol's avnet, that's okay because they both wore an avnet. So we'll qualify that as who will bond off. Okay. Okay, now the Gemara says, Vaiter. On the Mishnah says, Lahispit lit no lo. What happens? So the Mishnah continued, back in the Mishnah. We said that if he didn't give it to the Kohen and he dyed it, yeah, then he doesn't, and it's, he doesn't have to give it to him. He's not Mechuyiv anymore, right? Potter. But if he whitened it, then he is, etc. So now the Gemara says, Itmar. Gozas umochar rishona. What happens if instead of waiting until he built up the minimum amount of wool to make him a chuyim erster gaze, as he sheared each bit, he sold it. Yeah, so he didn't, at the time, he didn't have a shear. And sheor, not shear, shear to click on the sheep. He didn't have a sheep. He had a shear, but never sheor. So he sold it. Yeah, so at no point, by the time he got to the point where he had sheared a shear, he didn't, it was all sold. Yeah, he sold it off already. There's Rav Chisda on my, yeah. Rav Chisda says it's chayiv because now he's got to the shiur, so he has to give Reish the gaze. Rav Nosson bar Hoshia Omar is potter. He doesn't have to because by the time he gets to the shiur, there's no more shiur of sheared wool. It's Rav Chisda Omar chayiv. Rav Chisda says he has to give it to the Koyed the Hagozas. The poil, he has now sheared the shiur, and therefore he has to give it to the Koyed. Rav Nosson bar Hoshia Omar is potter. Because Be'idna the Kamala Shiura, when he gets to the point where he has filled up the minimum amount to make him b'chuyev in Reish Dagez, but in Antzayin Cha, the Laka. It has to be the... not, yeah, not Tzayin Cha, it's saying, but in on... So on the side, the editing goes somewhere, I can't find it. There's a little gimel there, and I can't work out where the gimel's pointing. Anyway, it needs to have... Yeah, no, it is Tzayin Cha, because he sold it. He sold it, right?
He sold the wool.
Okay, that's right. But what he means is it needs to be wulcha. Yeah? It has to be yours, and it's not anymore. So once you've sold it all, by the time you get to that last bit that fills up the minimum amount, it's not yours anymore. Yeah? And
there's a way to avoid it if you wanted to.
So it would be tax avoidance. Yeah, it's a tax avoidance loophole by giving away or selling bit by bit as you shear it. Okay, so that's the Nasan Bar Hoshia. So now the Gemara looks right to in our Mishnah. It's not, we learned in our Mishnah. Halakeyach geiz tzoyne shal ove kechavim is part of Meresh the geiz. If you buy the wool that has already been shorn from a sheep of a non-Jew, then you don't have to give Meresh the geiz. Hot tzoynoylig zoyz is chayiv. If you buy a sheep that's about to be shorn, so you buy the... you buy the sheep of the goy for the purposes of shearing it. What does that mean? That after you shear it, you're going to give it back to the guy. You buy it temporarily for shearing. And when the shearing season is over, or whatever it is, it goes back to the guy. Yeah? So, or actually, not even the shearing season. Each sheep, once you've sheared it, it's still the guy's, it's back to the guy's sheep. You only own it for the purpose of shearing it. Once you've sheared it, it's back to the guy. But the Mishnah said, it's chayiv, it's amai, why are you chayiv? Kol chad v'chad, every sheep, basa de giza, after you sheared it, nafgalei mishusa, it's gone out of your possession, back to the guy. So at the point when you get enough wool, five sheep with whatever the amount was, 7.5 sloim, enough to make you mechuyiv mishusa gaze, all those sheep now belong to the guy. So why should you be chayiv? Is Tirgum or Rav Chizda, Libid of Nasa Barhoshia? It's an interesting concept over here. Rav Chizda and Nasa Barhoshia are arguing about whether it's Chayiv or not. Rav Chizda said Chayiv, Rav Nasa Barhoshia said Potter. And we're asking a Kasha on Rav Nasa Barhoshia from our Mishnah, which seems to say Chayiv, and Rav Chizda, who could have sat there going, aha, you're wrong. Instead of that, he said, no, that doesn't prove that you're wrong, because we can explain it. I don't want to win the argument on false pretenses. Yeah, keep going. Shehitim lekosh leshim yoyim. Right. So I was saying that what that as soon as you sheared the sheep, it goes back to the possession of the non-Jew. So we can say no. The Mishnah is talking about where you the whole season, like I started with, that you bought it from the non-Jew for the whole season of the shearing, 30 days. They have, I don't know if this is true or not, but they have a month when they do all the shearing, and they must have some period of the year which is the shearing season when the sheep all get their wool. Yeah. You're not going to shear in the middle of winter because the sheep will die of cold. So, am I right? I just made that up.
Sounds good,
yeah. So anyway, so you bought the sheep, that is for 30 days the sheep belonged to the Jew during the shearing time, and after 30 days he'll give it back. So what does that mean? That he collected, less than 30 days, he collected enough wool that he's mechuyev in the rest of the days. So that's where the Mishnah says chayiv. So if Chizda says, I'm not going to claim victory based on that Mishnah, and we will remain with our debate, and then we came to a two dots, said Rav Chizda, and therefore we'll go and talk about something else. Okay.
If he did get just one sheep and did it that way, he wouldn't be chayiv.
Well, Rav Chizda says it would be anyway, but Rav Chizda says I can't prove that I'm right from that Mishnah. Yeah. Okay. Next, Alakeyach. Gaze, so you know Shachaveira. Now, okay, so what do we say? If one person buys the shearings from the other, so what do we say? If the moicher left some behind, the seller retained some wool, then the obligation of reish dageis sits with the seller. But if the seller sold it all, then the obligation sits with the buyer. So let's discuss that. So the Gemara says, Man Tana, who's the Tana who says that Hecha de Ika Shiura Gabe Moicher, that if the Moicher left something behind, Basa Moicher Razlin, and the obligation sits with the Moicher. Yeah, so obviously this Mishnah is talking about Rachis Agaz, but we're going to talk about other situations where somebody sells something, and we're going to say that an obligation on that thing that he sold remains with the seller if he left some in his possession. Is Omar of Chizda, Rabbi Yehudahi. Rav Chizda says it's Rabbi Yehuda's opinion. What do we see by Rabbi Yehuda? Litznan, Rabbi Yehuda learned in the Mishnah in Peah, Hamaycha kilcha ilan b'seich sadeyu, someone who sells the trees with the fruit. Kilcha, the Rosh and Kilcha Rashi says because trees are growing in a field that's not specifically an orchard, so you call those trees kilchi. They're like sort of squatters. The trees don't really belong there because it's not an orchard, it's a field. But the field happened to have some trees in it. So those trees get a special name, squatter trees, kilchi. So someone sells those trees from his field. So the first Tana says, you've got to give payah from each tree. Each one is a separate entity in its own right. And therefore he says, you can't just give payah, or leave payah is probably more correct terminology. You can't leave payah on one tree and say, all right, that's the poor will take that and the rest of it's mine. You've got to, each tree is treated as a separate entity, and you've got to leave a portion of each tree for the poor. Amar Rabbi Yehuda, and that's if you sell it. Yeah, that means you sold the tree, and now you're saying that each tree has to leave for the poor. Now, Amar Rabbi Yehuda Emesai, and we know that when Rabbi Yehuda says Emesai, that means he's not arguing, he is explaining. That's a general rule. Emasai, says Rabbi Yehuda, to explain the words of the Tanakhama. What did the Tanakhama mean? When is it that each tree you're giving peyo from each tree? Bizman shalashir balasada. If the seller, the owner of the field, did not retain any trees for himself, he sold all the trees of the field. Yeah, so then every tree becomes a separate entity. Give peyo to each tree. Avoshir balasada. If the owner of the field retained possession of a tree or two or however many, nois and pay a la coil. So now those trees are part of the field. So it's all one guy who owns one field that happens to have some trees in it. So a payah is one per field. Yeah. So the moicher can leave payah for his field. Yeah.
Would you think it's the other way around?
Sorry?
If you sell all the roots, treated as one field. If you sell some of them, it shows
no.
That
well, that's the whole point. This is the point of that when the moicher leaves it behind, it remains with him. Think about what would happen if he didn't sell anything.
What about certain commandments? Right, but if you're selling everything, you're showing that it's all one field.
No. The point over here is that when you sell it, do you sell it when it's already been exempted from payah? In other words, the seller has a responsibility for payah, so the buyer has no responsibility whatsoever. Yeah. So the concept, it's not an argument about whether it's separate entities or not. It's an argument about who's mechuyev. If the moicher is mechuyev, since it's all his, it's all one entity. Yeah. When the buyer buys them, they're separate entities. So if the buyer bought everything, he has to give a payah from each one, because each one's a separate tree. But the seller retains chiyuv. If the seller is obligated in payah, when you have one field, doesn't matter what's growing in it, you leave one payah, and that's patters the whole field. So that's the point over here. So this is what we're saying, that the shita of Rabbi Yehuda is that when the seller retains possession of part of his field, so he too does payah in that field, and that covers the whole field. So therefore, says Rav Chisda, the same thing with the wool. If the seller retains possession of some of the sheep, then the obligation of payah of reish zagei sits with the seller, and when he does his reish zagei, that exempts the whole lot, and the buyer doesn't have to worry about it. That's what Rav Chisda says. He wants to compare the cases of retaining possession of part of the field as retaining possession of some of the sheep. So Rav says to Rav Chisda, who was his father-in-law, Shver, v'hamarhu da'amar, you're the one who taught me. When is it that the obligation of payah on this field retains by the moicher when the moicher started cutting it before he sold anything? So, when you cut the cuttings of your land, then you have a chiyuv of payah. The moicher started cutting the produce of that field. At that point in time, everything belonged to him. So that's the point where the chiyuv of payah arrives. So now, even though he sold a few trees out of it, the chiyuv of payah, which he already had, he will leave the edge of this field and gamarnu, and he's yoitza for everything. Yeah. You're allowed to argue. No, he didn't really argue. He said, "Oh, but you taught me." Hear how he said it? Now, you said one thing, but you said another thing, so I'm confused. That's what he said. Robert said to him, "I'm confused, Shver. Please help me out. I don't understand." He didn't say, "What the hell are you talking about?" Yeah? He goes, "It all depends on the way you speak to people." So he said, only when he started already. So that means the obligation of payah was already there. So then if the moicher sells some trees, he retains the obligation. Yeah? Masha Enkein, if he wouldn't have started, what would be the din? By the time the obligation arrives, the tree already belongs to the buyer, so then it would be the buyer's problem. Now, so what will you tell me by the sheep then? That when is the obligation of sheep? The obligation of sheep is when you, not only when you cut it, but when you build up the size. You've sheared enough wool to make an avnate. No, sorry, that's have to give them to him. You sheared enough sheep, 7.5 sloim, yeah? That's when the obligation arrives. That means at the time when the seller sold, there was no previous obligation on these sheep. The obligation arrives in the hands of the buyer. So what are you comparing over here? Yeah? The chitema hachinami. You'll tell me that the pshat in our Mishnah, when the moicher is giving the reishis hageiz, is v'husha hischa ligzois, that the analogous situation is when the seller started shearing the sheep before he sold any of them, right? So that so therefore he now has the obligation, and therefore when he sold a few sheep, he retains the obligation. It don't work that way. Why not? Bishlama hasal, when it comes to payah in a field, the Torah says that when you cut the produce of your field, that's the pasuk. Is meid not the aschalik to mechayev mechulasana. When you start cutting the produce, that's when you are obligated in payah. So if the moicher started cutting before he sold anything, the whole thing is obligated in payah in the hands of the seller. And when he then sells something, he sold something that is oiskepayed. Yeah, and it's his problem to take payah from the field. Elohacha, in the case of the wool, be'idna da aschel amigas, when you start shearing sheep number one, le'mechayiv b'chula edra, there's no obligation at that point to give reish lageis from your whole sheep. Your whole flock is the word I wanted. Yeah? So when you then sell some of the sheep, yeah, there's no obligation on them. The obligation is only arrives when it's already in the hand of the buyer. Elam Rava. So Rava says it cannot be based on Rabbi Yehuda's shita of payah, and we're going to transpose that shita onto Reish Zageis. There must be another logic over here that says that when the seller retains something, he has to give the Reish Zageis, otherwise the buyer. Rava says, "Hi Tanhu." It's not Rabbi Yehuda, sorry, but it's another Tana. It's the Tana of the following Mishnah that's not. Oh my Lord, we learned this in Reish's Hageiz, yeah? Not Reish's Hageiz, Matonis. It was Reish Lechem Akeva, yeah? One of the things that you have to give a Koyan is the stomach of the animal. What happens if a person says, Mecherli b'nei meyesh al porazu? Someone says to the butcher, sell me the stomach, the kishkis, whatever you want to call it, b'nei meyesh, of this cow. V'hoya b'hen matono is part of that bunch of kishkis of the cow, included the keva. So in there is something that's meant to be a gift to the kohen. Is nice than the kohen. So he has to give it to the kohen. That means the buyer now, who has it, he's a proud owner of this big cow guts thing. Yeah, he's got to take the keva and give it to the kohen. He doesn't even get a discount. Yeah, even though he bought the whole kishkis, he doesn't get a discount for the fact that he has to give the keva to the kohen. So what happened over there? Let's count cop. That means part of the cow still belongs to the seller, and the buyer bought what? The only the guts, the b'nei meyayim. Lokach mimenu b'mishkal. If you took it by weight, so that's a different story. Is there nice on the koyin? You still have to give it to the koyin because it's a chiyuv on the cow. You have to give the kaver to the koyin. But menakalim min adom. If the butcher said, "I'm selling you 10 pounds of meat," and inside that, some of it had to go to the Kohen, he's got to give him 10 pounds aside from what he gives to the Kohen.
What does it mean that Emanakalai Dami, it wasn't that, he took it into account?
No, he doesn't get a discount. That's right, that's the assumption, that when you bought that stuff, you can't go back to the butcher and say, hang on, I want a discount.
Correct, because it was already calculated.
Okay, that's why.
Yeah,
but
you could be looking at it.
Yeah, you could see a case where the buyer will tell him, hey, hang on, you ripped me off, because I have to give some of it to a Kohen. So he says no. No, by Mishkal, if the Kohen says, if the seller says, cow kishkis for sale, when you buy it, you assume that you have to give to the Kohen, and it's your problem, right? It's part of the sale price. If you say 10 pounds of meat for sale, then you don't assume that in those 10 pounds is something you have to give away. Right? That's it. Okay. So what do we see from that? Turn the page. Alma. We see from that, Matonis de Koyen le Maz Beninish. That means that what's happening over here is that when the seller sells the kishkis, yeah, he's not... That means the Matonis are not part of the sale. Yeah. So when I sold you the kishkis, I never sold you the keva. I sold you everything else besides the keva, and therefore the keva I have to give to the Koyen. Yeah?
The butcher's responsible anyway to give it to
the butcher's responsible anyway.
So he should have taken it out before.
In the last perek, Shreel Lechem
Akeva. He should have taken it out before if he's responsible anyway.
Okay, the buyer has to just know, yeah, didn't matabach, but the buyer has to know that in there that keva belongs to the Koyen already. Yeah? It's Hachanami, so when it comes back to the sheep, Matonis to Koyen loy maz bininish. A person doesn't sell the matonis. So therefore what happens is when you sell wool of the sheep when the moicher leaves some behind. When he sold it to the buyer should have understood that what he's buying is everything besides what has to go to the kohen. Yeah, just like with the keva hilchah shir hamoicher. If the moicher left some behind, then the moicher's chayiv. Of this wool, some of it. So by the keva, a stomach is a stomach. You can't argue about which stomach to give. Some animals have more than one stomach, but anyway, yeah, you can't argue about it. That keva belongs to the kohen. Over here, you can argue which wool you're going to give to the kohen. So the lekeach says to the seller, a sale never includes the matnas kahuna. Right, that's why there's no discount. It wasn't part of the sale, even though it's physically that cave was attached into the kishkis. But the poil, you didn't sell the cave. Yeah, you didn't sell it. So here also, the loikeach says to the moicher, you didn't sell the rejes agaz. You sold me all the other wool that's not rejes agaz. The rejes agaz is part of your pile of wool. You give it. Yeah. So he can say that when the moicher still has some left, the loikeach can say to him that the rejes agaz is in your pile. But if the moicher doesn't have a pile, as loishir, if the moicher didn't leave anything behind, he gave him everything. Is there the lekeach chayiv? The amale moicher, the moicher says to lekeach, wherever it is, it's somewhere in the overall universe of this wool. Is matar the koyin leizav lach? I didn't sell it to you, and therefore I'm not giving you a discount. So when you bought all of my wool, you understood that part of that belongs to the koyin, and that's not included in the sale. You have to go and give it to the koyin. Right? Whereas if the moicher left some behind, the lekeach will say to him, no, you were obligated in it. What I bought from you, people don't sell matnas kahuna. So what I bought for you is everything besides the kohen stuff. So you give you the kohen from your pile. Okay, Ajulach, where's the case? That's one more out of the way. Next comes, the next one's not a matnas kahuna anymore, but in keeping with the theme of the Masechta to talk about everything to do with food, now we come to eggs. So we had meat, we had basa b'cholov, we had gira nosha, we had zroch avakev, we had kishke, we had it all. Yeah. Now we have birds, eggs. Now we have eggs and birds. Sheluach hakein. So we all know that the Torah says when you're going to take beitzim or yefroichim, you're coming to take eggs or chicks out of a nest. Shalayach to shalach esaim. You got to send away the mother bird who's hovering over the thingo, and then you can take the thingo is called a nest, and then you have to take the, and then you can take the children. Yeah. So what are the parameters of this mitzvah of shiluach hakein? Says the Mishnah, noyeg ba'aretz uvechutz laretz. It applies in Eretz Yisrael and outside Eretz Yisrael. It's not to do with agriculture, so there's no reason why it should just be in the Holy Land. If Nei Abayis, which are Levi, if Nei Abayis, doesn't matter if the Beis HaMidrash is standing or not. There's no distinction. The mitzvah applies nowadays. Bechulin, it applies to birds that are not holy. Aval Levi Mekdoshin, you're going to jump out of your chair and say, what sort of a bird is going to be hektish? Well, the bird is hektish and the baby is not hektish, etc. We'll talk about what sort of Mekdoshin. And anyway, how do you get, because Shiluach HaKein only applies to wild birds, how do you get a hektish bird that's wild? We'll talk about all that stuff. But the first concept is it only applies to chulin, not to hektish. Chayme b'kisi adam Shiluach HaKein. We learned about kisi adam way back in one of the prokim too, right? So, kisi adam applies to birds. When you shech the bird, you have to cover the blood, yeah? When you take a baby bird, you got to send away the mother. So they're both bird halachas. So the Mishnah says that there's a stringency in Kisi Adam that applies not to Shiluach HaKein, which is Shekisi Adam Nei B'chayu Uva'oif. First of all, Kisi Adam applies not only to birds, but also to undomesticated animals, whereas Shiluach HaKein, if you want to take a baby deer, you don't need to, Bambi, you don't need to send away the mother deer. Oh, dear. B'mizumen, if it's a, and it only applies if it's Mizumen. Sorry, Kisya Adam applies when it's Mizumen. Mizumen means that it's already in your stock. You've got it. So when you have a chicken, the chicken who lives in your backyard is Mizumen. He's prepared, he's yours, he's You don't have to go out and hunt him. Yeah, he's, I don't know what good word to translate Mizum, and he's already, huh? It's domestic, but it's not only domestic, it's already in your possession. It's not something, the Torah says, ki yikore kan sipa lefonecha. If you happen to come across one, you're going for a bushwalk and you happen to find a nest. Yeah, if you grow nests in your backyard, there's no shiloh hakei. So your chicken that you grow in your cages, your battery chickens, yeah, you don't have to do shiloh hakei. Masha'en kain. Oh, sorry about that. That was an accident. Yeah. Whereas with the kisa yadam, that applies no matter what sort of a chicken is, whether it's free range or the battery, you have to do the covering of the blood. So obviously there's nothing to do with animals, only birds, sending away the mother bird. Only applies if you happen to come across it out in the wild. Doesn't apply if it's growing in your chicken farm or backyard or whatever. What is the definition of something that is not mizumin? Chickens and ducks that went and squatted out in your orchard. So you're not having a chicken farm over here. A couple of random chickens came in out of nowhere, and they built a nest out in the orchards. Yeah, nothing to do with chicken places. So that's called animism. And you went to pick the apples off the tree, and you found a chicken growing in the tree. Aval, I don't know if chickens grow in trees, but whatever. If they have nests in your house, in your backyard, and similarly, doves that are like pet doves who grow with people is potter mishaluach. You don't have to send away the mother bird. Okay. Yeah, because Herod had pet doves. You know, when people are kings, they get a bit bored. So, as a hobby, he had pet doves. Herod the Sois. Yeah. Only her joyce. Rashi says because they're used to living with people, so maybe they're like the animal activists want them to be like on equal footing. So it's you share a house with the bird, you know. Give them an aliyah. Anyhow, if Tommy, what about a non-kosher bird? Potter malashaleach. You don't have to send him away. Why are you chasing away a non-kosher bird? Because you want to get the non-kosher babies. I mean, you don't have to, but why would you think you have to? You're going to get a non-kosher baby. What are you going to do with a non-kosher baby? You'll have to sell it to a non-Jew, I guess. What happens if a non-kosher bird suddenly is found hovering over kosher birds in a nest? They swapped parents, yeah? And they've got
to be sending away the mother.
Hey?
That wouldn't be sending away the mother.
Oh, one second. V'tohar revetz al beitzei eftomei, a mother, a toher bird who was fluttering over eggs in an unkosher nest. Potum al shalayach, there is no sending away. Koirei zochor. Yeah, I think what we're gonna find is that a mother can be also like a stepmother. Yeah. So it doesn't have to be a biological mother. So you're right, that's a good point. Nowadays that fits right in with everything, yeah? The bird identifies as the mother, so that's good enough. Koire zochar. Koire is a... Now, in Rashi it says an oif tome. But they edit it to say an oif toher. And you'll see why. Because if it was an oif tome, we just said that an unkosher bird does not shloch hakein. So it wouldn't even mention it. So we have to say it's a kosher bird, but it's a male. With this one, not only is he mixed up in species, he's mixed up in his gender as well. So the father bird identifies as the mother, and he's hovering over the kids, is Rabbi Lezer Mechayev. Rabbi Lezer says that the word mother in that sentence is lav davke. It means a bird that is hovering over the kids. Yeah. The guardian doesn't have to be dafke mother. If it's the father, is also. The Chacham say no. If it's a male, then it's not in the deal.
In penguins, only fathers.
Who?
Penguins.
Yeah. Have you ever seen a penguin hovering over a nest of penguins?
No, they've got eggs inside.
They don't fly, though. They have eggs inside while they're not hovering over the eggs.
In a pocket. Like
okay. All right, so the males hold them. But, yeah, so according to Rabbi Lezer, Her aim is not is lav dafke. It doesn't mean only a mother. It could be any bird that happens to be there. Yeah? And Chum say no. If it's the male on top, then it's the male is hovering. Doesn't count. Okay. Says the Gemara. Rab Abin and Rab Meisha. There's two guys. Rab Abin and Rab Meisha. Chad Omar. One of them said kol hecha detnan ba'aretz v'chutz la'aretz. In this whole masechta, we all have noticed that all of the Mishnayos talk about ba'aretz v'chutz la'aretz. All these things. It tells you that it applies in Eretz Yisrael and in Chutz La'aretz. In all of those cases, it's shalo l'tzorech. It doesn't need to tell me. Because we know the rule is that if it's a mitzvah tluya ba'aretz, if it's agricultural, then it's in Eretz Yisrael only. If it's not agricultural, it's not. So all of these things to do with animals is not agricultural, so you don't need to tell me that it applies to Chutz La'aretz. Levad, it's only there for completeness, because it's giving you all the rules, so it ticks the box. Levad Merejus Ageis, the only one where it actually was necessary for the Mishnah to bother mentioning that it applies in Chutz La'aretz is Regis Ageis, La'afukim in the Rabbi Eloi, because we have to show that this Tana of this Mishnah does not hold of Rabbi Eloi's opinion, the Amar Regis Ageis, they don't know Ba'aretz, like we learned the last few days, and Rabbi Eloi learns Nesina Mitruma to say that Regis Ageis doesn't apply in Chutz La'aretz. So there, when the Tana says it applies to Chutz La'aretz, it's necessary for him to say that Rabbi Eloi is only a Das Yochid, and everybody else says it applies to Chutz La'aretz.
Wouldn't it be more fitting to put this Gemara by Rashi's Ageis?
I think he waited till the end, after we finished all of the places where it talks about,
the first one it would make sense.
Where we finished all of the Bayis and Lema Bayis. So that was one thing. The Chadom, the next one is called Heichat Nafnei Bayis, because this is a general rule about the Homosechta, right? So you wait till you've learned all of it, and then he tells you the general rules. Wherever the Mishnah in this Masechta mentions that a certain halach applies with the Beis HaMikdash or without the Beis HaMikdash is also Shalei Tzorech. Again, because there's no reason why it has anything to do with the Beis HaMikdash. Yeah, Levad me Oisev Espinoi. There, Oisev Espinoi is the only one where it needs to tell you. Why does it need to tell you? Because Solkotai Techamino, Hail of Inyan of the Kaching Sif, since the Pasuk of Oisev Espinoi is in the middle of the chapter that talks about Karbonis, as we're going to read on the first 2 days of. No, not the first 2 days. Second day only of Pesach and Shere Chesev. So then, therefore, you would have thought. Bisman de ika kachim ninoy. You would think that only when kachim is relevant, i.e., when the Beis Hamikdash is standing, that's when the law applies. Bisman de leka kachim loy ninoy. Kamash malon that it applies even when there's no Beis Hamikdash. So that's once Rab Abin said one, Rab Meisha said the other one, but Travayu Amri, and then they got together and they both said together, Kal Heichad Etnan beChulin and Mukdashim. When the third thing that the Mishnah, all these Mishnahs say, when it applies to Chulin and Mukdashim, and in some cases it's Chulin and Lay Mukdashim, all of those are Litzorech. It's necessary to tell you all the things that apply to Kekdish and don't apply to Hektish. Levad Begir Hanasha. Except for Gid HaNosha, because Gid HaNosha was also first, so there's no reason to tell me that it applies to Mukdashin, because why would you think it goes away? It doesn't become Mutter suddenly, because you made the animal Hektish. Fredi Gemara Pshita. Oh, it's not Fredi Gemara. So why is it Lola Tzorech? Because it's Pshita, it's obvious. Mishum the Iktish, Pokala Yisra Gid HaNosha Minei. It was Osir till now. Now you said this animal's Hektish, all of a sudden the Gid HaNosha should become Mutter, it doesn't make any sense, and therefore the Mishnah doesn't need to tell me that Gid HaNosha applies to Mukdashin. So the Gemara says, 1 second, the Mishnah over there asked that it's Pshita, that it's obvious, and it said, why does the Mishnah need to tell me? Because it wants to tell you that the children of the animal, whether it became Hektish before Gid HaNosha applied, that it would, and the Isra Chalal Isra, we learned over there, yeah, in that case, you wouldn't necessarily know that the Isra of Gid HaNosha applies to Vlodis Kachim. So it was the Tzorech. So the Gemara answers, my time of Kimna, why did you establish that Mishnah is talking about Vladis Kachim? The Mishnah doesn't say it's talking about Vladis Kachim. The only reason why you said it's talking about Vladis Kachim is, La Mishum de Kashalon, because you had a Kashalon listening, that it's unnecessary. So now I'm telling you that Mikoranamo, the Tishlach, now that I'm telling you that they mentioned in all of these Mishnayos things that weren't necessary, you don't have a kasha in the first place, because I don't know, because the Mishnah mentions all of these things where it's needed, so to keep these Mishnayos all consistent, it mentions it even where it's obvious. Okay, so Shalokha can apply Bechunav ala Mikdashin. Now, my loy, why doesn't it apply to Mukdashin, to Omar Krah? Shalayach to Shalach Esa Aim, Bemisha to Mitsuva the Shalchoy. That means the mother, if it's Kodesh, you're going to send it away. So that's the ksyotzozeh to exclude hektish. Shiata mitzvah l'shalcha. You don't have a command to send away the mother bird. The mother bird is hektish. El lavir the gizbar. You got to bring it to the Beis Hamikdash and give it to the gizbar. So it's excluded from the din. Amar avina hilkach. Therefore, if tohar shaharagas hanefesh. If you have a kosher bird that murdered somebody, is also potter mishiluach, and then it happens to be hovering over the eggs. You don't have to send away the mother bird murderer. Because my time the Omar Krosh Aleh to Shalach as a aim, someone you gotta send away. The Mishatamitsuwa the Shalcha, it's a bird that you need to send away. Yotzash Yatamitsuwa the Shalcha, love you the best, and you're not supposed to send him away, you gotta take him to court to be judged. Hechidami. You ever saw Alfred Hitchcock birds? Anyway. Hechidami, how is it possible? Eat the Gamardine, if the bird was already had his Mardin Paskin that is high of Misa, is Bark Tolahu. Yeah. So what's it doing fluttering over a nest? It should be on death row there, under guard. Ella, the loy gamar dina. That means that the gamar din hasn't happened yet. You have to bring him to Besdin so he can be judged in order that we can get rid of the evil in our midst. On that cheery note, we'll continue tomorrow.
Where did you start?
Huh?